The Learn Me Something Podcast with your hosts, Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum.
Hey there, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
In the podcast land, my name is Rich Plum.
And I'm Aaron Stewart.
And we're here at Alex Knight's house, so you know what that means, everybody. It's another edition.
Oh, I do, and I'm excited.
One more time, it's Learn Me Something.
Hooray.
I love this one, man.
I'm quite interested in this, as a matter of fact, actually. It should be.
I mean, I love this one as a podcast. I said it as one, as though we have many that you and I do.
See, and we do that, where a lot of these things, you know, like we're very excited to be able to talk, but not necessarily the excited about the subject specifically
yes.
that we're talking about.
This one we're going to do on collateral damage.
Oh, wow.
That sounds like a simple term, right? Collateral damage. What's collateral damage? That's whatever. That happens in the world all the time. Let's just breeze on past
it could be as simple as a fuck you, hey? And the collateral damage of that could be far, far more than you expect it to be.
So I got this idea on the Today I Learned on Reddit. You ever go on Reddit? It has a TIL.
Every
you see the TIL, capital TIL, and then something that means Today I Learned, and then they have what they learned.
Okay.
So someone had Today I Learned, and it was about the casualties of war and the variance between World War One, World War Two, and I was like, wow, that's a huge variance.
Mm.
It got me prompted. That was a few months ago. I'm like, I'm going to do this one on collateral damage. Do you think I could find the fucking article? No.
Really?
I looked the internet upside down trying to find that specific article. I couldn't find it, and in fact, found some contradictory information to what I originally saw, so we're just going to go with it, buddy.
Well, and that, again, like a lot of this comes down to the scientific process where, you know, what we know today may be disproven tomorrow. And that's kind of how things go and technically how they should go, as far as I'm concerned, where, you know, that's what we know now, but it's the best of our information, not the all of our information.
So I was hoping that I was disproven, but it was kind of a bad way because it just is a lot worse than I thought it would be. Okay, Aaron, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs, buddy. You've heard this before, right?
I have heard that statement, yes.
Okay, so that goes back to 1740s.
Really?
In France. That old. Okay, yep. So the first time...
Was that the origin of omelets?
No, that's the origin of that phrase.
Oh, okay, all right.
first published in 1796 by a monthly Irish magazine called Walker's Hibernian Magazine.
Right.
They were doing an article on a guy named François de Charette, who was a royalist in the French Revolution.
Okay.
So he was in the Vendée district, and that war lasted for years. And during his capture and during his trial, it was remarked, this is what the magazine says, it was remarked to him that he had caused the death of a great many persons. Yes, he replied, omelets are not made without breaking eggs. So that was the first time that phrase has ever been used. Now, that is a terrible phrase because you are associating the breaking of the eggs as human death that this person is causing.
Well, it's kind of a callous way of looking at a human life as something that you can just simply smack on the side of a...
And it's completely inaccurate from a metaphor standpoint, okay? Mainly when you're talking about... casualties of war or collateral damage, because people will say that, oh yeah, we killed 10,000 civilians. Hey, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. People will say that, but that's not an accurate depiction, not an accurate metaphor. That would be like saying you can't make an omelet without punching your wife. You can't make an omelet without kicking someone in the balls, stabbing the milk. No, because your goal is to make the omelet, not to do all the other additional things that you did.
Yeah.
So there's something
If by cracking open that egg, it exploded and resulted in your fingers being taken off, that might be a...
might be a good metaphor.
There you go.
There's something called intended harm versus foreseen harm. Now, intended harm is something that you intend to do to somebody. Mm-hmm. Foreseen harm is something you know is going to happen, but it's not your original reason for wanting to do something. And the intended harm is morally... more reprehensible than the foreseen harm.
Mm.
Okay, example is you go to get a vaccination by the doctor. The doctor's going to stick you with a needle, is going to cause pain in your arm. He's going to do this on purpose.
Right.
The foreseen harm is him injecting you.
Right.
It's done for another purpose, not for that purpose. So this not as bad as happening as if he just really likes to stick people with stuff. you went to a doctor that really liked just to jab people,
if he was just jabbing needles into you for no apparent reason,
morally reprehensible. Okay, so what I want to ask you and to the listener during this thing is, when is foreseen harm more morally reprehensible than intended harm, or does that ever happen? Is there a situation when foreseen harm is as bad as intended harm? So we're talking about casualties of war. We're going to go to war with somebody. Mm-hmm. We know that people are going to die. Mm-hmm. Innocent people are going to die. That's the foreseen harm. It's going to happen. Innocent babies, kids are going to die. At what point does that become as bad as if you're going to kill innocent people? Take, for example...
Well, and see, that's where, I mean... By going to war, you're kind of making the assumption that they're the enemy.
Well, they are the enemy by definition.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, and that are allows they the world's
you,
enemy?
That, see, but that means that any harm you're doing to them technically is irrelevant.
The harm that you're doing to the enemy?
Yes.
In what regards? I don't know what you mean.
In regards to that person would be out to harm you, so therefore you're out to harm them first.
Okay, so that's in the case of militant versus militant. Now, what about civilians? What about people that have no interest in the war?
Well, that's the problem. Like, as far as I'm concerned, any harm should be something that we need to be, you know, more thoughtful about in this, you know, day and age where we don't have to live in tribal communities throwing stones at each other in order to...
Sure. And I would agree with you. War's a fact of life that I don't believe should be there, but it's there. So the question is when is it too much? When is killing somebody for the greater good a bad idea, okay?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, any killing.
I would...
That's my libtard...
Yeah, I mean, you and I are both pretty liberal. We're probably going to say the same thing.
Well, I mean, I just look at it as, you know, where do you draw the line of who must die? And why do you get to decide? And when you get down to the moral standpoint of it, you know, there's no time when someone is not going to have an adverse reaction to someone else dying. You know, whether it's you killing, you know, or like someone feels for that person. And so you're causing more pain than you think of by, you know, this.
You are. Hold on to that thought because this is huge, okay? Mm. This is huge. We're getting into a whole, I got a whole page on
that.
Oh,
I love it. Awesome. I love the depth of this whole.
Okay, but take about this, okay? So you're a full-grown human adult male that has all the organs that you need, okay?
Yeah.
So let's say there's five people that are going to die unless we get your organs. Mm-hmm. So by killing you, we could save five people. Mm. Is that morally, are we in the moral high ground? Because we're taking this to, we're not doing foreseen harm or intended harm to you. We're doing foreseen harm to you because we want to save these people and we're going to take your organs.
The only way they will live is if we kill you.
Yeah, and the side effect is you're going to die. That's not the intended harm, that's a foreseen harm because that just happens when we remove your organs. Mm. So it's not what we intended to do. It just happens and we know it's going to happen. We know you're going to die, but as a result, we save five people. So that's the question I want to pose to you. It's a rhetorical question. Leave it out there as we talk about this, the difference between intended harm and foreseen harm, and when do they become parallel or when do they become, are they different things?
When does one outweigh the other? Is there a time when, you know, foreseen harm is acceptable? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so collateral damage. The definition of that is the incidental wounding or killing of non-combatants or destruction of property during legitimate attacks on combatants. The word collateral is typically used as a synonym for parallel or additional. For example, you have collateral veins. They run parallel to each other. Collateral security, meaning you're adding additional security to achieve the main obligation. So collateral damage is additional damage that you are causing by your main objective. Mm-hmm. So the term collateral damage first was used in this type of context on May 1961 in an article by a guy named T.C. Schilling. The name of the article was Dispersal, Deterrence, and Damage. Hmm. It was used mainly during, or really coined during the Vietnam War because a lot of collateral damage happened. That was really the first time you had an enemy that didn't wear a uniform. Mm-hmm. And you didn't know who the enemy was. And they used human shields as cover. They infiltrated towns. And it changed the way that warfare was essentially done. Now, the main I want to say, focal point or the main thing I can get out of the Vietnam War. There was this issue with Ben Tre. It was a Vietnam town in 1968. The Viet Cong took over the town. So the U.S., through airstrikes against the town, completely destroyed the town. They killed 550 civilians and wounded 1,200.
Wow.
Now, there was a reporter named Peter Arnett who was doing a news article on the attack. And he asked an unnamed military source, because he wouldn't be named. He said it became necessary to destroy the town to save it. Which, think about that. We had to completely destroy this town in order to save it. We had to kill 550 people, innocent people, for what, the greater good?
Well, and that, you know, you get down to the reasoning behind the war in the first place, and it becomes a, you know, in the previous podcast, the need versus want debate.
Okay, so anyways, here's what got me going on this article is, do you know how many people die as a result of collateral damage in a given war, like percentage wise?
I would guess, like in terms, like as a ratio between the intended casualties and the collateral casualties.
Sure. Well, let's go.
Like in terms of, like, you know, for every 100 soldiers killed, how many civilians are killed?
Let's go total number of deaths.
Total
number of deaths caused by the war. So let's give an example. The bloodiest war that ever happened was World War II.
Mm-hmm.
70 million people died as a result of World War II.
And how many of those
were soldiers? Yeah. How many were civilians, would you say?
I would say 10% soldiers and 90% civilian.
You're well off, but that's...
Okay. Well, that's...
I thought that it would be far different.
Okay.
I'm in my ignorance.
You were on the other end of the spectrum
there? I thought it would be 90% soldiers, 80% soldiers. Right. No. It was about 70% civilians.
So 30% still soldiers. An outrageous number of people that had nothing to do with it being killed for something that they had no say over.
The rough estimate of 70 million people killed, 46 million people were civilians.
And that was just that one war.
That's not
counting all the other bullshit that we've got going on over the course of humanity.
Mm-hmm. World War I, 7 million combatants were killed versus 10 million non-combatants. So
in World War I, there was way fewer civilian...
Well, there were fewer deaths.
It
was about 60% ratio. Now, is that?
Yeah.
It's because, one, the British, they loved the carpet bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. was more strategic. You ever see the movie, what's that one with the B-52... and their last mission, and they get to go home.
Memphis Belle,
yeah. Thank you. And they had, and it was covered.
Mm-hmm.
The battlefield was covered by clouds, so they had to keep circling back, and they all get pissed off because they didn't want to bomb and kill innocent people. That was what the U.S.'s target was. Where the British were, nope, were leveling everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they would destroy everything. But there's lots of other reasons why.
So it became necessary to destroy the town to save it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I'm going to give some examples in a minute, and it will blow your mind.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay, Korean War. 700, almost 800,000 combatants killed versus 2.73 million non-combatants.
Jeez.
Vietnam War. 2 million civilian deaths versus 1.1 combatants. Iraqi War that we just had. Now, here's where it gets a little sketchy. There were almost 40,000 combatants killed, and estimates range anywhere from 189,000 to 500,000 civilians. Now, the number of innocent people dying per year has been dropping since the World War II.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we're in what we refer to as a period of long peace. Now, it may not feel like peace.
Yeah.
But there's
a
reason
for it. With the
number
of actual, you know, bombs being dropped in any given day. But
it's not rich countries going to war with other rich countries.
Mm.
It's rich countries going to war with poor countries, like the U.S. going to war with Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's civil wars happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the scary thing is you have civil wars happening that are backed by big rich countries.
Right.
And that, in a second, can escalate to another world war, where now you have China has got a lot of money and a lot of weapons going up against the U.S., you know, North Korea.
Well, North Korea provoking the whole...
That could be some issues. Okay, So,
and see, and that's like every one of these civilians are the ones taking the toll.
The civilians are the biggest deaths. So that's why I also want to talk about this, because you have some people, Trump supporters, we always talk about Trump in our podcast, but they're like going to war with them.
Well, he'll go away soon enough.
Ted Cruz.
And the next guy will be. Yeah.
Ted Cruz, in his campaign last year, he said, I don't know if the sand can glow, but we're going to find out. What is he saying? Like, what is he, like, people hear that and they cheer, yeah, go USA, USA. But what is he saying? He's saying that he's okay with killing millions of people, mm-hmm. innocent people, completely innocent people.
And for what?
And for exactly, and for what? Mm-hmm. Because we're so afraid of ISIS.
Yeah.
Because ISIS and the 40,000, however many people that they have that every now and then claim responsibility for some whack job somewhere, we're so deathly afraid of that person or that organization that our scope of what's acceptable just expands. And now it's okay. Let's see if the sand can... And we're so angry mm-hmm. that people that are wearing a hijab or look Muslim are now getting our ire and our fire, and we just let's turn the whole place into a parking lot. But do you know what that means? Mm-hmm. Do you know what that actually means? So we're going to talk about what that actually means.
Good, good.
Because I like, you know, getting dark.
I was trying to kind of put myself into that you know, the you know, empathy for refugees circumstance, you know.
Well, okay, so let me get back to collateral damage. So a lot of people hate the term collateral damage. People like you and I probably do, because what it does is it minimizes or dehumanizes mm-hmm. what actually happened.
Mm-hmm. They're not collateral, they're people.
Collateral damage is people, innocent people mm-hmm. getting killed
yeah.
that did not deserve to be killed.
But even further than that, like damage even to a building. Like if your home were bombed, even if you didn't get hurt, your home, you still have to, you know, there's still damage. There's still emotional trauma. There's still all sorts of, you know, let mm-hmm. alone if it wasn't even you, what if your neighbor? What if your neighbor got bombed and you know,
exactly.
it, not even them, but their house is destroyed and now you have to, right? And it's just this whole thing that just seems to be an equation that people, you know, social cost that people aren't being aware of.
Exactly. Critics of it don't like it because it dehumanizes the people that actually died and it reduces the culpability that governments have. I mean, collateral damage is a term we hear, oh yeah, there was some collateral damage. Oh, that's too bad.
Mm.
You know, is. If it was like, hey, and we also killed, you know, 15 kids,
yeah.
just so you know,
yeah.
that also happened.
But that's how they can get away with, you know, not saying that they killed 15 kids, but they had collateral damage of the mm-hmm. deaths of 15 children. And it's that wording difference that is supposed to make it somehow nicer and better and even easier to digest.
On that note, I 100% agree with you. And that's why, you know, the English language we have so many words to describe so many things. And that's one of the things that we, I think, have to be really careful about and at least be cognizant and be willing to reevaluate the use of words, because words carry weight. And going back to Rich's point too, I mean, when you say something like that, collateral damage, I can see why in certain circumstances it does seem like it's, it is diminishing or making less important of something that may be incredibly serious.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get into some specifics that will, for me, you know what this was like? It was for me when I was reading it, I had to get up from my computer and like walk and like mm-hmm. get a drink and just mm-hmm. like, just tell my wife.
Especially
like,
when you see
happened?
Numbers, when you see numbers like 2 million civilians that died, you
okay,
know,
so
out of you
let
know,
me get into some crazy
no,
stuff.
No
okay?
other problem than being living in a spot that they decided to throw a bomb.
Okay, let me throw some stuff at you, okay? So here's some big ones. World War II was the really bad one, okay?
Mm.
So you had the siege of Leningrad, which was, and Stalin really had an issue and really helped with the civilian damages that they occurred. Now, Russians lost 25 million people in World War II. They took the brunt of the blow. A lot of it civilians, 60 or 70% were civilians, because Stalin did not let his civilians flee cities. He thought his soldiers would fight better if they knew that there were people's lives inside or in the cities.
Yeah.
Stalin was a special kind of crazy. Superseded the, anyways. So there was a siege of Leningrad that happened. So the Nazis came in and they surrounded Leningrad. It happened for 2 years. They blocked off all food in and out, and it was a city full of people. So 1.5 million people died by starvation over 2 years at this at the Siege of Leningrad because Stalin wouldn't let them leave. Here's the crazy one, China. So in 1938, the Japanese were advancing through China. The militants said, hey, I got a great idea. We got this big dam here, some dikes. Let's bust these dikes. Boom. It's going to cause a river. It's going to cut off the Japanese. They can't get through to us. Problem solved. And someone said, hey, thumbs up. Let's make that happen. They went and they destroyed the dikes. Dikes flooded the area, killed 1.5 million of their own people.
Okay, what?
They killed 1.5 million of their own people.
And by being washed away by the water?
It caused three times, it caused three times the amount of people that died in the tsunamis of 2004.
So nobody thought to see where the where that water might go to and get out of the way? No,
hey, you know what? Maybe we should put this out and let, you know,
maybe
people know.
Maybe we should be on the upriver portion of that so that when the water goes downstream, we're not standing there going, where is this all this water coming from?
It was called the Yellow River Flood. I didn't actually write it in my notes, but it was the Yellow River Flood, and it was the worst ecological disaster of any war ever.
Wow.
It flooded the entire countryside, and for years, it flooded farmland, killed 1.5 million people. Well, 1.5 million people died as a result of it. A lot of it may come after the fact. I think 800...
If there was starvation or something.
800,000 people, I think, initially died in it, and then the rest died after. So that's Russia, that was China, those are the bad countries. What about the good countries? What about Britain? Have Britain have any culpability? Have you ever heard of the bombing of Hamburg in Germany?
Well, see, and I would think the British should be the kings of collateral damage.
They did carpet
bomb.
Or
the queens of, you know, I mean.
So they would create something called a firestorm, where they would bomb the shit out of a city to the point where there was a fire tornado that would happen above the entire city. This happened in Hamburg over 5 days of bombing. It killed 42,000 people, most of which civilians. They called it the Hiroshima of Germany. So I was reading, or I was looking on the Wikipedia page, they actually have a news article about the bombing of Hamburg. And it's funny listening to it because they say, huge success by the Allies. We've destroyed their fisheries. We've destroyed their weapons manufacturing. We've destroyed their ports. The entire industrial sector is up in flames. Congratulations. But they failed to mention the number of innocent people that they killed as a result
of
it.
Well, yeah, of course.
42,000 people.
Yeah.
And most of which were innocents.
But that's the problem, is that, you know, were people actually aware of a lot of this collateral damage? You know, I think that it would kind of change, hopefully, our perspective on war. In that, you know, it's not just the soldiers getting killed here. It's people who are taking the... And that's where, you know, we come into this immigration problem of, you know, refugees and how you deal with them. Like these are people that have, you know, that were just minding their own business. And then one day a bomb destroyed their house. And they were lucky to get out because their neighbors didn't get out. And so now they're, you know, left with nowhere to go. They, you know, everything they've had has been destroyed. And if you were put into that position, what would you want to do?
Yeah.
You know, and would you want people to, you know, hopefully have some empathy for your situation and understand that this is nothing that you had, and it doesn't make you a bad person because you now had to flee the situation that you, you know.
So this is what happens in war. So Hiroshima, okay? Now there's a big debate on was Hiroshima or Hiroshima, depending on how you want to say it. Was it right to be done? So that stopped the invasion. That Nagasaki stopped the land invasion into Japan. It saved hundreds of thousands of deaths. So
it became necessary to destroy the city to save
80,000 people died in Hiroshima, and Hiroshima was targeted because it was not a lot of military presence there. Where it wasn't heavily defended.
I was going to say, so they specifically targeted civilians?
Essentially, they did. I mean, it was because it was not on the map as being a key strategic point that they had to defend. So there wasn't a huge military presence there.
So they could sneak in the back door
they could go in
having
there
as much of a...
And they could bomb it. So 80,000 people died. So guaranteed in that, how many are going to be kids under 10? Like figure what? Maybe 5,000. Probably on a good number.
Yep.
Aaron, I said to you, if you go around the corner, there's 50 babies.
Mm-hmm.
You shoot them all in the head, you're going to save the lives of 200,000 men. Do you do it?
It's easy to ask that but until you're actually under the gun, under the pressure, you don't know what you would actually do.
Yeah,
I agree.
If it came down to knowing that, you know, those men that you were potentially killing were going to grow up to be, you know, terrorists or, you know, people who are going to potentially invade your country and take away your...
So again, I go back to the question, intended harm versus foreseen harm. Yeah. The intended harm in this situation was to impact the Japanese government. The foreseen harm, which they knew was going to happen, was they were going to kill 80,000 people, most of which were civilians. And this thing, 20,000 military people were supposedly killed. So 60,000 civilians just that just happened to be born in Hiroshima or moved to Hiroshima, living their lives, going to work. Their country goes to war and they, 60,000 of them died. Mm-hmm. And they died horribly, by the way. Some got evaporated immediately and those were the lucky ones. Mm-hmm. The bad ones burned to death and in starvation and radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Nagasaki happened just after that. Estimates are hard to say because a lot of undocumented workers were working there, but up to 80,000 people were killed there. 150 military people were killed. Jeez. Not 1,000, 150.
Wow.
It also killed at least 13 BOWs, including one American and one British. Pearl Harbor. Hmm. Now, 2,500 people were killed in Pearl Harbor. Those were military people, but they weren't at war, so there's a debate. Was that casualties of war or was that a military action? So that's the past. Okay. The past is the past. That was a long time. That was World War I. That's from my grandpa's time. What about right now?
Collateral damage right now.
Collateral damage right now. What does that look like? Do we still do it?
Well, I believe the U.S. is still bombing at least 7 countries.
But are we killing as many people as we say we're killing?
Are we killing as many civilians as we say
we're
killing?
There are still casualties.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Maybe not in the numbers that you're talking about from the past because
we
now...
We haven't dropped a nuke on anybody
but
lately,
it still happens with drones. I mean, you hear about these reports all the time with drone strikes and stuff like that, but certainly those numbers probably get smaller now with technology where we can be more surgical and precise with our attacks.
And that's the problem is that, you
know, I'm not saying it's from, right, but...
Yeah, oh yeah, no, but like from watching, you know, the research they've done on the drone thing, like... In a lot of cases, it's not where they have a confirmed blah, 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 or, you know, like, I mean, in a lot of cases, it's treated like a video game. And so, you know, you use it as collateral damage, not people you're killing.
Mm.
And so it's that separation from, you know, you're actually taking a life here with this, you know, video game joystick that you're using to pull a trigger on a drone that, you know, is actually pointed at people.
Sorry, I'm just looking for something here.
Oh, I thought I'd drag that out long enough for you to...
Yeah, well, you got me thinking about something, actually. So, okay, so what's happening right now? And this is kind of what blows my mind. Not blows my mind, because I know it's happening, but just actually hearing it happen and looking at it from that perspective
that we're still doing this to each other.
Intended harm versus foreseen harm. And when is it bad and what's a war crime? And when are we the bad guys?
Mm-hmm.
Twice.
More than you'd think, probably.
Two times, U.S. military aircraft attacked wedding parties, killing 49 people. Sorry, this happened one time.
Gatherings of people that looked like some sort of...
Okay, so two U.S. military attack helicopters, I think there were, attacked a wedding party in Afghanistan. So what happened is, as you know, over there, when they celebrate weddings, they fire their weapons into the air.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw people firing their weapons into the air. Gave a quick, hey, we got some people firing their weapons into the air.
And
we cleared
dancing
attack.
Around as if they were, you know, celebrating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Could have been avoided with, this is why I actually think that, I mean, again, going back to previous podcast episode where education is the key to understanding cultural differences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still kind of mind-blowing that we're still making those mistakes today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's a bigger argument there than just understanding cultural difference. I think it's a mindset. And I got some really good examples in a minute here. So the Pentagon said the pilots were reacting to anti-aircraft fire from heavy weapons. However, according to the Afghan Defense Military Chief of Staff, the guests were only firing small arms into the air in celebration of a wedding. And his account was backed up by survivors. 2 days after the attack, President George W. Bush phoned his Afghan counterpart, and express sympathy for the victims, called a tragic loss of life. However, the Pentagon maintained that it is not at fault in the incident. And that is not the only time. So another time, U.S. military airplanes bombed wedding parties, both in Afghanistan. It occurred in July and November of 2008, leaving more than 100 people dead. In both cases, the U.S. military expressed regret for the loss of civilian life, claiming that the intended targets had been Taliban militants operating in the area. So the Pentagon right now is not, they've taken the position that they're no longer going to acknowledge collateral damage happening. They're not going to talk about it. They're not at fault for it. They're not going to mention in their briefings.
What, seriously?
Yeah.
So they've just decided that they can kill people and not talk about it.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, that's where I look at, okay, these are my taxpayers.
Yeah.
My tax dollars going to this, okay?
And you'd think it would be something that people would find to be pertinent information.
You think it would, because that's going to help us. Okay, if I'm going to make an election, do I want a government that's going to, like, what level of protection do we need to make sure that there's going to be no civilian casualties? Now, I read some articles that said, basically, someone has to look at it with the binoculars. And if that person can say, I don't see any militant or any civilians there, green light, good to go.
But how do you tell, like, how do you differentiate between a civilian and a militant?
Well, that's the thing,
or,
too.
Or, you know.
Just to play devil's advocate.
Yep.
You can't really have a war, can you, without any kind of civilian
no,
casualty?
No, you can't. You can't.
Because
no.
That's also unrealistic. Yep. We also have to realize that they have a very difficult job to do.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, okay, they have a very difficult job to do. I doubt that at all. I think there needs to be a lot more oversight and a lot more precautions taken to making sure, and a lot more, obviously, sensitivity training. Okay, so check this out. A couple more things I want to get through. On March 17th, I think this was 2008, a 500-pound bomb was dropped on two snipers that were attacking U.S. military. As a result, the building collapsed and it killed 105 civilians. And this was confirmed by the U.S. government. So my question to you is, again, intended harm versus foreseen harm. And what is that foreseen harm doing? You got 105 people that just got killed.
Just to take out two people.
Yeah, to take out two people. And is that the best way to do it? I mean, I understand that you have to protect your own guy's life. But what damage is that doing? What those 105
That's exactly
people
the problem.
Had family.
Exactly.
Friends.
Exactly.
They had all of these things. And how? What is their reaction going to be? Mm-hmm. Do you think they're going to be the least bit? Oh, you know what? I guess they had a couple snipers
well,
up there.
I guess they were just collateral damage.
Yeah, well,
and I guess
you know,
that means, you know. And I guess since they're not going to acknowledge that they actually killed those people, they must just not have happened.
Have you ever seen the video Collateral Murder? It's a YouTube video. So Chelsea Manning, you know Chelsea Manning? Mm-hmm. Bradley Manning, who was recently released? So he went to jail because she stole a bunch of documents, one of which was a video of Collateral Murder. Have you seen it, Alex? Collateral Murder? Okay, so I'm going to talk about this video. She went to jail because she released this video. And so it's a scene where there's an attack helicopter over a group of people, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, there's one guy that clearly has an RPG. There's one guy that clearly has an AK-47. But what's also in there is two reporters from, I think, BBC of Rutgers.
Rutgers?
Rutgers,
okay, actually, I know the one you're talking about.
I think I know which one you're
And that's very troubling.
Too. Your mic's not working, by the way. I didn't hear you. But Alex has seen it, and it's disturbing.
Yeah, I think I've seen it, too.
Okay, so I'm going to tell the viewers in case they haven't seen it, or the listeners. So the attack helicopter, they get clearance to attack, okay? Mm. And fair enough, there's two reporters in there, but they're with people that are clearly militants. Mm. So attack them, take them, most of them out, except for one guy, who's actually one of the reporters, and he's crawling away, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what's concerning to me, listening to that, is the lack of empathy or the lack of human decency on those attack chopper pilots. I mean, they're seeing this guy crawling away for his life, who's just been shot, whose entire, all of his friends were just killed. His colleague was just killed. He's crawling away for his life, and they're joking, laughing, and saying, and have the crosshairs on, well, just reach for a bun, buddy. Just reach for a gun. Or sorry, reach for a gun, buddy. You know, Then this is what blew my mind when I first saw it, is a van pulls up.
Yeah.
And people get out to help this person. Mm-hmm. And immediately, those two on the radio call, can we get clearance to kill this van that's pulled up? We don't see any weapons. There's actually well, it's just they driving by and they saw someone who had been hurt and they went to help them.
Yeah.
So they get the clearance. Oh, yeah, there's no one east of our location. Go ahead, open fire. And they open fire on this van that's there to help people. I'm thinking, you don't kill the medics. That's why they wear the big crosses on them, because they're the ones that you're not supposed to kill. That's the Geneva Convention. That's what's supposed to happen. But no, clearance killed or started shooting this van that was helping.
Mm-hmm.
Blew his windshield out, killed the guy that they're trying to help. There was another guy down on the ground, killed him. And then all of a sudden, the military shows up, the foot soldiers. And they come in, and there was actually one of the guys in there. His name is Ethan McCord. He has another YouTube video on there where he's talking about that exact incident and how collateral damage or the rules of engagement, how much of a joke they are, and the mentality of the soldiers and just the entire leadership in Iraq at that time and how dehumanizing it was. Mm-hmm. So he shows up there, and in front, in this van, there's two kids. There's a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. Hmm. Their father is dead over them in a protective manner. This guy was driving his kids to school, saw someone on the ground that needed help, got out and helped them. So he thought that the son or the boy who was about 4, I think, was dead. He had a bullet wound in his head. The girl had one in his stomach. He picks up the girl, runs her over, says, "We need to get this girl evac now." And he says this, and you can see the video of the attack helicopter where he's saying, "Oh, there's two kids, the girl's got a wound," you know, and the exact response from these attack helicopter guys was, "Oh, well." They said, "Oh, well." A 4-year-old and a 7-year-old were just attacked, and their response was, "Oh, well." And then they said they shouldn't have brought their kids to a war zone, I guess. Like, talk about dehumanizing. So this guy goes and he takes the girl back, and he says something, I just had to go back and check. Mm-hmm. And he went back and checked and he saw that the boy had moved. The boy was alive too. Picked the boy up, ran him over. He got in shit from his superior officer, said to him, "What the fuck are you doing? Messing with those two kids? You're supposed to be on security detail," and told him to get onto the roof. And the guy, it was a young guy, so he's like, "Okay." So, and one of his friends actually took a picture of him, and he's there. He's like, "I didn't realize I had the kid's blood all over me." Mm-hmm. He's up on the roof doing his guard details, got blood all over. So he was having a really hard time dealing with that. So the next couple days after that, he says, "I need to go and see the counselor."
Mm-hmm.
His supervisor says, "If you go see the counselor, there's going to be disciplinary action against you. Get the sand out of your vagina and get back out to work."
Jeez.
This goes back to what you were saying about sensitivity training. And this is something that's not only that problem that you're talking about is not only prevalent in the military, but it's in the police force.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is.
In this country, in Canada, maybe more so in the United States, you see this all the time. And it's something that definitely needs to, we need more transparency in government, and we definitely need sensitivity training in the military and police to avoid stuff like that, because I think there maybe even needs to be more screening of the people that are actually getting into the military.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really believe, this is my own personal belief, but I really believe a lot of the people that are going into the military may have some other deep-seated issues that are... they're just not well suited for that job.
See, but okay, do you know anything about the Stanford Prison Experiment?
No.
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah,
yeah, because I think I've mentioned it at one point on the podcast. But they basically took, I believe it was 16 just regular people, and they made 8 of them prisoners and 8 of them jailers. And it was basically supposed to be a week-long experiment that they were running, and they just basically randomly assigned people as either jailers or prisoners. And it was supposed to run for a week, but they had to shut it down after about 3 days because of the just rampant abuses that were going on. And as soon as you put people into those situations, and it wasn't a problem of them being bad people, but when you put them into a situation where they're given that kind of control over another human being.
With probably very little training.
With no training, right? They were just basically assigned randomly as a jailer. And so they didn't have any sensitivity training. They didn't, but that's where, like, even with sensitivity training, like these people were raping each other. Like they were beating seeing each other. They actually had to like shut this experiment down because it became a human rights issue.
Well, and how many times have there been issues where people in a position of power, for example, like in prisons, like the prison guards abusing, you know, prison, regardless of what you think of whoever is actually doing time, like they have certain rights. And people in positions of power all the time abuse that power. And maybe, I mean, does additional training solve that problem?
And that's the problem. That's where it's a problem of the system itself. It's not the problem with the people, because the people are put into a situation where, you know, you have to make certain changes to your psychological. Like, you can't treat a prisoner the same way you would treat another person on the street. You have to put them into a separate category.
So you're saying those people are ill-equipped really for the position that they're in.
What I'm saying is that the prison itself is not a good method of making people not commit crimes.
I think that opens up a bigger can of worms. What is the solution? You
know? We'll do a separate conversation on that at some point. But
so getting back to this one, that's a clear case of collateral damage, and that's you can say collateral damage, and you can explain it just like I explained it. And it's even more powerful when you see this. And I remember the first time I saw this video, and I was amazed. As soon as that van pulled up and they started asking, can we shoot the van? I'm like, they're not gonna shoot the van. Like, are they seriously gonna shoot the van? They're coming to help people. They're gonna shoot the van. And they shot the van.
And it's just the callous nature that they do with it. That there was no human empathy. There was no,
and what's
this
the
is
checks?
A human being that I'm pointing a gun at. There was no, you know.
There was nothing like, oh, they have identifiable weapons, we can see them. No, they're picking up a guy on the ground. And that was a check. There's a van here picking up. He said, they're picking up bodies and possibly weapons. And they said, okay, there's no one in east of our position, so go ahead and shoot. And they said, fire. And then they were joking about it. They blew a hole through the windshield right where the kids were sitting. They were joking, oh, look at that hole. A tank ran over a body, and they joked about it. And it's just that desensitivity to it. Okay, now here's another one, okay? That was in 2008. I got another one. This happened years ago. So are you familiar with the Doctors Without Borders attack? There was an attack on a hospital that the Doctors Without Borders are calling a war crime. It's not as big in the news as I think it should be. The Young Turks talked about it a lot. And I got a couple of show notes in there for the Young Turks talking about. So let me give you of what happened, okay? So there was a hospital in Afghanistan in 2015 that was run by the Doctors Without Borders. And they would help out whoever needed to be helped. So if it was Taliban, they would help the Taliban. If it was the Americans, they would help the Americans. Whoever needed help, because they're doctors, that's what they do. So the Afghan forces had complained to the U.S. military that they were helping the Taliban. And they were like, yes, we are. We're helping anybody. So they let everyone know where this hospital was. It had flags up.
Because traditionally in war, you're not supposed to attack their medics.
No, you're not. But this hospital helped everybody. It was Doctors Without Borders. So it was people volunteering their time to come and help. So Afghan forces called for a backup. Now, this is where it gets this a bit sketchy. And here's what, because you mentioned something about our language. So when this originally first happened, it was reported of, okay, so there was a Taliban resistance at a hospital. We attacked the resistance and there was some collateral damage. Some doctors died. That was it, okay?
That's how it was originally reported.
Yeah, there was some collateral damage at the hospital. I think that's exactly how they said it. There was some collateral damage at the hospital.
A couple people, you know.
So what actually happened? And then they said, oh no, it was called in by the Afghan forces. They had asked us to support them and attack this hospital because there was militants in it. There were no militants in the hospital, first off. It was just doctors. The Doctors Without Borders saying this was a planned attack because they were helping the Taliban. So here's what happened. they were attacked by two helicopters. The bombings lasted 1 hour. They made 18 distress calls to U.S. forces to stop the attack. As a result, 22 people dead, mostly doctors and patients. Patients were burned alive in their bed. Doctors were decapitated with limbs blown off. And people were shot. Doctors and patients were shot as they were trying to flee the hospital. They were gunned down. This lasted an hour. So Having said that,
there were a few. That wasn't the only. There were multiple hospital attacks, if I recall.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of them that happened in the past year.
Yeah, there. I know there have been other ones before, but I don't think there was any by.
Well, that's
US
been
forces.
Kind of one of the things in the Syrian.
No, but it was ISIS. I remember reading it was ISIS that was attacking. They have no conscience at all.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, but either way, it's disgusting that happens.
Well, it's. I mean, but the reason I want to talk about it is the wording of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we attacked the Afghan forces and there was some collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus we attacked a hospital for 1 hour. We killed 22 patients and doctors.
Well, a hospital that had no Afghan forces.
Yeah. A hospital that clearly identified themselves as a hospital. Mm-hmm. Let us know their coordinates beforehand. So this stuff didn't happen.
Let alone called you repeatedly while the attack was going
on. Called us 18 times. Now, if that had been reported, and that's where I think the transparency needs to happen from the Pentagon is, if we're voting on for these people to be elected and they're doing shit with our tax dollars, we better know damn well what they're doing with it and what their consequences are.
And that's also part of this comes into the discussion too. What is the role of the media too? And that it's also incumbent upon them to accurately report and not downplay anything that's actually happening. Like, and I don't want to single out any one particular publication, but you know, if you are reporting on something like that, you probably shouldn't use the word or the term collateral damage. You should really relay the facts as they are, as bleak as they are, because people need to know about this. People need to know what the severity is. You cannot mince words about when something like that happens.
See, and after our podcast on empathy, I actually found an article where they've shown that news groups that block out, like if there's a horrific video, if they actually show part of that video, people actually feel more empathy to that that thing than if they had just kind of talked about the incident and not actually shown that video. So there's a theory that by actually showing, you know, these horrific incidents as they're happening, that we can actually allow more empathy that would help us to, you know, sympathize with those people and kind of see where they're coming from versus just having this story being told to us about this, you know, imaginary sort of thing that kind to happen to some people, maybe.
It's strange. Coming from someone, I mean, from my perspective too, someone who's had training in journalism too, and it's still to this day an ongoing debate, and it is a struggle to find that balance of what you report, because you do have to take into consideration, you know, whether or not to show particular video footage, and you have to ask yourself as a journalist, what does this actually add to the story? And sometimes it is, I mean, this happened with 9/11. This was a big question among many journalists about famously the footage of people jumping from the burning towers.
Right.
That footage, a lot of people wanted to hold that back, and certain people published that footage, but it became actually very, very powerful. And a lot of people believe, I mean, certainly I believe that it was a good decision to show that footage.
And that's the thing they found is that there's, you know, they keep thinking that censoring this kind of information is for our better interest. But in reality, I don't think, like, and it's the same thing with, you know, collateral damage, I feel is a problem with the political correctness movement, where, you know, instead of saying people died, now we have this PC sheen on it of collateral damage.
I think that's a propaganda technique rather than a PC.
But it kind of comes to the same, like, I mean, realistically, political correctness is kind of a propaganda technique, right? It's a matter of changing how the words do you use, what they mean, right, in order to mitigate the effect of what you're trying to say.
Yeah, in that regard, absolutely. You're right. I think it's just it's wording to make something horrific sound less horrific.
Exactly. But whether that helps us or whether that desensitizes us to what's actually going on, that's the problem, right? By doing that mental gymnastics of no, you can't say this because, oh, you'll offend people, and now you put it into a different term that makes it less sensitive to people, but you're actually making it something that they can't connect to, and that you can't feel that this is actual human pain that's going on, that you know, something's actually happening to someone else, and it's you on you to actually feel this. you know?
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
and it's not to derail too much, but too, this is actually something psychologists have also debated too, and actually been some have been a proponent for, of the quote unquote trigger warnings on a lot of, be it video footage or the written word, about if we put trigger warning at the top of everything that we're about to see, suddenly it's like, it's almost like we have to like walk on eggshells.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
It doesn't make us more truthful. It doesn't mean that what you're saying has any more meaning than you know, saying fuck or having, you know, these words that we've deemed as you know, things that you can't say in polite society. But it doesn't mean that what you're saying has any less relevance to what you're saying, you know, just because you're using words that people don't like.
Okay, so let's talk about the drone strikes, because those are happening now. We have a war in Syria, we have a war in Afghanistan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. military is boasting that the drone strikes are great because we're taking human life, we're not putting pilots in the air, they're safe, they're whatnot,
well,
they're more precise.
Well, yeah, you're not killing our people, you're only killing their people.
But they're more precise. I mean, they boast a 17% civilian ratio, you know, so 15% of civilians have been killed. Of all the people killed, 15% of civilians, which is way higher than the 70% that World War II is
happening,
right? Well,
yeah, it's not a 60 to 70% at least. But whether that's the actual numbers or whether that's not just the numbers they're reporting or whether the rest of them are collateral damage that don't count as human death.
Well that's of all the, they're saying that 15% were collateral damage, okay? Mm-hmm. So there was research done in mid-2011 that claims that at least 385 civilians were killed on the drone strikes, and more than 160 of them were children. Hmm. But the problem is where are you getting the numbers from?
Mm-hmm.
The New American Foundation estimates that number is actually more closer to 20%. But here's the really big issue, is there were some leaked documents, and there were, The Interceptor had an article on this, where how they classify militants is very bleak.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were a Taliban person and they bombed this building and they killed, let's say, 80 people,
mm-hmm.
well, they just killed 80 militants. Unless mm-hmm. they can prove that the people in the building weren't militants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very hard to prove.
So they're guilty and
until proven guilty. Until proven innocent.
Which they're not really keen on proving, as, you know.
Yeah, because what's that going to do
more,
for them?
That's exactly. How does that help them to say, oh, no, these were civilians?
So this person says, if there is no evidence that proves a person killed in an airstrike was either not military-aged male or was a military-aged male but not an unlawful enemy combatant, then there is no question. They label them enemy killed in action.
Jesus.
So I think that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I would consider that a bit of a problem too. You know, just manufacturing enemies.
And just manufacturing your success rates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just something that you're boasting on. You're so.
Yeah, it does seem a problem of self-reporting.
It does. So, I mean, that's the problem with this whole thing, is because war's ugly. War's mm-hmm. terrible. And an unforeseen result of war is that, or a foreseen result of war, mm-hmm. I should say, is that people are going to die. That's not our intention. We don't want to kill 160 kids that we killed. We killed them. I mean, that's the good guys killed 160 kids. Nobody's changing their Facebook profile pictures for this. No one's marching. No one's taking, there's no concerts happening for this.
Well, but let alone when their family tries to get out of that country.
Yeah.
Now you're adding roadblocks so that they're left in limbo and have no means of,
exactly.
of, you know, making their lives any better than this shithole that they've been thrown into.
And that's what we did. Now, mm-hmm. now we can say we have the moral high ground because it was a foreseen and not the intended. Where if someone comes over to Charlie Hebdo's office and purposely kills 13 people, mm-hmm. that was an intended harm, and that's way worse. So let's all change our profile pictures for the week,
mm-hmm.
and we're, you know, whatever the strong France or whatever we had,
mm-hmm.
you know, on that same day, the same day that Charlie Hebdo thing happened, Boko Haram went and killed an entire village.
Yeah,
the same day,
mm-hmm.
a Muslim militant group. But no, those people were black, so we don't really care about those ones. We care about the white ones. We're going to change our profile pictures for those, even though they killed tons more.
And also, that was an enemy that they've chosen. That was an end, like they were, that was a, you know, that
yeah,
was
Boko part, Haram.
Well, no, yeah, exactly. Right.
We don't really know them.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Versus these people that we've already designated as the enemy. So everything they do must be
ISIS. They're the bad ones.
And to me, that speaks to, like, this is what actually really bothers me about, I mean, it's one thing to show solidarity and support for something, you know, for a group of people or a country when something catastrophic happens, but it really bothers me that there are so many of these movements where, like you're saying, Rich, where people change their profile photo and it doesn't mean
thoughts
anything.
And prayers.
I would rather somebody donate, find a charity that that does something good and actually put your money where your mouth is and actually do something rather than just like changing your Twitter profile. Yeah, sure, it makes you feel good, but that doesn't change anything.
Well, it's Facebook philanthropy.
It absolutely is.
You know, where you know, oh, I'm such a big person because I do these Facebook profile changes every time something bad happens.
You mentioned actually we talked about Doctors Without Borders. I strongly support their cause.
Oh, God, like,
there's the stuff that they do is, I mean, a lot of those doctors that go in there, I mean, they're not getting paid and they're
volunteers.
They do truly amazing work.
Yeah, they do. And if you ever guys ever watched The Young Turks, that's, what's the guy's name? Cenk? Cenk? Have you ever watched The Young Turks?
Nope.
Check him out. He's, I mean, it's a good news show, and he's really just gives it to him. And he says the same thing, like, we're the terrorists. We just killed.
Yep.
We killed 22 doctors.
And that's the problem, is that from the other perspective, you know, it's as soon as you put yourself into other people's shoes, well, you're dropping bombs on people. Well, what does that make you?
We're the good guys.
Whether you call yourself the good guys or not, that's still creating terror.
Yeah, but that's the foreseen harm, and not the intended harm. We're causing terror, but we don't mean to cause terror.
You say it's the foreseen harm, and I would say it is.
I would say,
but you could say a lot of things.
Yeah, I think
whether they're really
harm.
True or not is, you know, I mean, if they're able to just manufacture militants by saying, oh well, we can't prove that they're not,
that's propaganda.
So they must be.
That's
but it's the same problem with all of it, right? I mean, you can manufacture that excuse for anyone. That 4-year-old child is lying dead next to a gun. Well, they must have been meaning to use the gun.
Well, it's funny because it also comes down to purely a matter of perspective.
Exactly.
Too,
exactly.
Right. You know, it's like
we
hold ourselves up to this on this pedestal, this certain standard. But I mean, when you look at it, nobody's hands are really fully clean.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, but I think all of this stuff needs to be transparent. Okay, so check this out, okay? By February 2013, the Haymaker airstrikes, these are the drone airstrikes that we did in Afghanistan. They killed...
the Americans did.
Well, yeah, the Americans. Well, the allies.
I suppose.
They killed 35 specific people while, as a result, killed another 200. That they automatically declared killed in action, or enemy killed in action. So they were targeting 35 people. They killed 200 additional on top of that and declared them all enemies killed in action, which I think is kind of ridiculous.
But it's the same, right? I mean, if you're 100 miles away, let alone, I mean, if the drone is 100 miles away and you're still, you know, completely separate from that.
Yeah, we don't care.
They don't care, and they're not interested in going in and proving themselves wrong, so...
Okay, and then Trump right now, one of his things is he's given total authority to the military to do whatever they require, is use as much force as necessary to kill ISIS. And as a result, 20% increase in airstrikes and bombs. And as a foreseen consequence of that is more civilians are going to die. And how is that? So I'm just going to throw this out there because it's a long conversation. How is that helping the war on terror?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can kill terrorists with tanks and bombs. You can't kill an idea.
No.
You can't.
No, I mean, it seems like a double negative.
And it goes back to, this is being covered even in fiction so many times that when you have those kind of extremist groups, like you were saying, Rich, with a certain ideology, that just perpetuates and multiplies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can take down the Osama bin Ladens of the world. There's always going to be somebody to replace them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is a deep-rooted thing. And this is not something you solve overnight.
Well, it's the us against them is generally what I come back to when it comes to this kind of thing. And that if we were all just kind of an us instead of having them, then we wouldn't necessarily, I feel, have these kind of issues because we would all just be trying to help each other out, and you wouldn't have to kill each other because that's your brother.
Yeah.
That's your sister.
That's what the girl that waxed my chest, I think we talked about last episode, she's from Pakistan. So I was talking, I'm like, I'm going to do a thing today. Tell me about Pakistan. And she said, you know, we don't see each other as people. Like, I love my son as much as your mother loves you.
Yeah.
And we don't understand that. We don't see that. So if you kill someone's son, you don't understand that they also feel love. And then you're killing someone that they love.
Yeah.
The U.S. has Obama signed an executive order about collateral damage. And this is what it said. Civilian casualties are tragic and at times unavoidable consequence of the use of force in situations of armed conflict or in the exercise of the state's inherent right of self-defense. The U.S. government shall maintain and promote best practices and reduce the likelihood of civilian casualties, take appropriate steps when such casualties occur, and draw lessons from our operations to further enhance our the protection of our citizens. While at the same time, the Pentagon is now no longer stating when collateral damage happens or when, you know, they screw up and they bomb a wedding party.
They're very sorry it happens. But it happens.
Yeah. So there's humanitarian law or international humanitarian law, something called the Roman Statute or the Rome Statute. This was something that was established in Rome in 1998. It essentially helped find the International Criminal Court that prosecutes war crimes or is used to regulate war crimes. Under international humanitarian law and the Roman Statute, this is what it says, by the way. The death of civilians during an armed conflict, no matter how grave and regrettable, does not itself constitute war crimes. International humanitarian law and the Roman Statute permits belligerents to carry out appropriate attacks against military objectives, even when it is known that some civilian deaths or injuries will occur. A crime occurs if there is an intentional attack directed against civilians. Yeah, so essentially, that's when the war crimes come into play, like with Saddam Hussein or
Assad. So when he was deliberately targeting civilians.
Yeah. Assad with the sarin gas. And that's why the Doctors Without Borders are saying that they were particularly or directed and it was an intended harm against my or their facility. So how do we control collateral damage? Let's not go to war.
Is it possible to control?
I don't think so. Every single war has had collateral damage.
That's like I think every why they had one. To make that. Why the President Obama had to make that statement? Just because, you know, anytime you're having a war, people are going to die, and that's the problem with war.
So what I think they do is increase technology which they have, but they need more oversight. I mean, they cannot call it collateral damage. I don't think they have to call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Murder maybe is a. Why don't we start there? Start calling it murder. I bet you if we murdered
and just because it's state sanctioned murder, I mean, it's still, right? You're still killing someone.
Still killing innocent
people.
We've
kind of stopped using this term, but it's not that much better, but I actually still kind of prefer casualty of war over collateral damage.
Yeah, even that better because collateral damage there's no humanity in that. A casualty you can see.
It's very at least acknowledge that someone died from it. Versus, I mean, collateral damage could be, you know, your car got a dent, you know, or you broke a window. I mean, that's collateral damage. That's not, you know, someone's head being, you know, taken apart by a bomb or you know, some child with their arm being taken off by shrapnel. It's completely just a separate.
So do you know right now there's only 7 people investigating all civilian deaths in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, that would make it pretty easy for them to say that people, that, you know, now 200 people that died are all definitely, totally.
We totally had time to check them all out just fine. And
we did background checks on all of them and found that they were all definitely tied to.
Yep. And I found it as of May 26, I think it was 2016, the Pentagon will no longer acknowledge when their own aircraft are responsible for civilian deaths.
Jeez.
Which blows my mind.
Well, that's really nice of them.
I just don't understand. Like, that's our tax dollars. You work for us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not for us. We're Canadian. But if we work American, you work for us. Like, you have to disclose that. We have to know what is happening. Like, what is our country doing? If I'm traveling to another country and they hate me, Why do they hate me? Oh, because we bombed
and
a bunch of
them. I think, the problem that they don't seem to be quite, you know, the question they're not asking is, why do they hate us? Why are they, why are we having to go and do this? Why is this, you know, why are we bombing them? Why are people dying?
It makes no sense to me, because we're the good guys, man. We kill people, but we only do it because we're trying to do the greater good. It's like we're carving you up, or we're giving all your organs to other people. We're saving five people, and we're killing you.
Just throwing it out there, but I think what would make a fantastic follow-up to this discussion is researching, going down that rabbit hole of... And I think this really has to do with maybe not as much with Canada, but really where is that deep-seated hatred of America? Where does that come from? And maybe look at history and trying to figure that out.
I would point to historically the fact that they keep dropping bombs on people.
Well, I mean, historically,
causing, and causing wars that, well, you know, have no real basis in them being bad people, but and more just being they got oil or something we want
to
take.
There is that dependence on resources that is still an issue too. And the Americans supplying people with weapons that they shouldn't be supplying
or,
to.
Or the simple fact that the whole country was originally based on, you know, going to another place and taking people.
Anyways, it is a long running problem that's goes back a long way. But
well, and I'm sure there's many and myriad different reasons for, and you know, everybody's got their own, and I'm sure a lot of it comes down to their own personal, you know, like their family member had something happen, or the Americans treated their family poorly or well, or you know, I'm sure there's lots of people that are even seeing them as the actual like liberators and you know, the good guys over there doing good for their country, right? Whether the evidence of that holds up or not.
So that is all, but that's a good actually point. We should probably look into that. Mm-hmm. Just try to see what that,
America,
where that hatred comes
America,
from.
America, why do they hate us?
They love us Canadians.
Well, that's because we're lovable.
They also tell Americans when they go overseas, pretend you're Canadian, put a Canadian flag on your back.
Every time you go traveling, that is kind of a specific thing they say. You know, make sure you're not considered American.
Okay, so that's all I have for the discussion
today. Well, thank you for expanding
today.
My brain, Rich.
Did
that I? That was actually a really good one.
Did I learn anybody something?
I did, in fact.
All right, so that's it for me.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you again for listening. Catch us on Twitter at LMS Podcast or like us on Facebook. We love that kind of thing. We're on the Hologram Radio Network as well. Find us at hologramradio.org. You can shoot us an email at learnmesomething@hologramradio.org. We're everywhere, so please come find us.
And I just wanted to make an announcement too. I have been working on this for a while, but we do actually have a YouTube channel. If you want to look us up, just type in the search Hologram Radio, subscribe. And the reason for that is because we soon will be streaming video. So I'm working on that.
Ooh, you're going to have to see our faces while we do this.
I'm the pretty one if anyone wants to know.
All of the sweat glistening on our... Anyway, again, thank you very much for listening, everyone. We hope to catch you next week. And as always, Florian Dendrite, may your brain cells flourish.
See you next week, everybody.
You've been listening to Learn Me Something with Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum on Hologram Radio. If you like the podcast, please rate and subscribe in iTunes and share it with a friend. To find other interesting podcasts like this one, please visit our website at hologramradio.org.